Fifty Shades of Grey, Beloved, and The Kite Runner were all books that in 2012 some people thought shouldn't be in schools or school libraries. Last year, over 400 titles were challenged.
Every year, the national book community draws attention to these books and calls to the freedom to read with Banned Books Week. And we'd love to know, what do you do, if anything, to observe Banned Books Week? Do you think some books should be left out of school libraries? Or should kids have access to all these titles? And have you ever challenged a book in your own library? And if you're a fan of some of these banned books, which ones? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can let us know on the Central Time Facebook page.
In just a few moments, we'll talk to someone from the American Library Association. First, we've got the author of a book that's been challenged in libraries, Peter Parnell, co-author of And Tango Makes Three. It's on the list of the top 10 challenged titles in 2012. Peter, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
So as an author of a kid's book, what's it like to hear that your book has been challenged in a library?
Well, let's see. You know, we wrote the book with certain goals in mind, certain ideas about reaching people. It's the book *And Tango Makes Three*. Right before it was published, received wonderful pre-publication reviews and wonderful comments from people. It took probably 6 months to then the better part of about a year before we were then getting comments that were not so favorable from parents. And, of course, it's always troubling to hear that. But, you know, the issue of censorship itself is especially troubling, and it's one of the reasons that the ALA is so valuable. It's one of the reasons that it's important to know when attempts at removing books or placing them in other parts of libraries is happening. And, you know, we've been very grateful to the local newspapers that follow what the activities of libraries, both public and school libraries, are. And we've been most grateful by the positive feelings that we've gotten, especially from librarians all around the country, as well as from many families.
Well, can you briefly sum up the plot of your book and the grounds that people were challenging it, asking it to be moved or taken off the shelf at their library?
Sure. And Tango Makes Three is a picture book, a children's picture book, that is tells a true story. It's the book was published in 2005 originally. We first heard about it from a New York Times article dealt with the story of two male penguins in the Central Park Zoo who pair bonded, and during the mating season time they pair bonded, and they were always together and did everything together. They sang together and they swam together. They spent all of their time together, and during the mating season, the head of the Arctic Zone of the Central Park Zoo, Rob Ramsey, noticed that the two male penguins attempted to hatch a rock. This is at the time when penguin couples build nests, and then after they build nests, they sit on their eggs to hatch their eggs. And Roy and Silo, these two male penguins, built a nest together, and they brought a rock that looked like an egg, tried to hatch it. Rob Ramsey and the rest of the zoo knew of a penguin family who was continually unable to hatch more than one egg, and if there was another fertilized egg, that couple would kick the egg out of the nest, but they were losing that egg. And Rob and the zoo decided to give that fertilized egg to Roy and Silo. And they took care of the egg and did all of the things that you do, that penguin couples do, feeding, making sure that each other is fed, keeping the egg warm, sitting on the egg, turning the egg, doing all the things in the months that it takes for the egg to hatch, which it did. And the zoo named that baby Tango. Roy and Silo were together for, I believe, over 7 years. Before they changed mates. And this story was a story that was written about, as I say, in the Times, and it interested us largely as a way to talk about different kinds of families and the fact that that there can be two dad families, there can be two mom families. And so we wrote it bearing as close to the truth in terms of what we knew and read about and interviewing Rob Ramsey and others at the zoo as well.
And then people have challenged it just in a minute or so. What were the grounds and what was the response from libraries?
Well, the grounds had to do with whether children should be hearing the story. That's not for as an argument. We're not saying that the book, we wrote the book to help parents teach children or for families to talk about same-sex parent families. And the book is no more, an argument in favor of gay relationships than it is a call for children to, swallow their fish whole or sleep on rocks. I mean, it's a true story. And the fact is that as a picture book, as a story about families, that's how children relate to it. We understand and we know that there's a great deal of anxiety, especially among conservative parents, when it comes to talking to children about gay families. But the notion that telling a child about gay people will increase his or her chances of becoming gay is scientifically untenable. It endures. It's something that people do have anxiety about, but it hasn't been proven. In fact, quite the opposite has been shown. However, be that aside, if a library buys a book and the book is in that library, it is against the First Amendment of the Constitution to attempt to remove it.
Peter, we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
That's Peter Parnell, co-author of And Tango Makes Three. It's on the banned books list, and we're going to talk more about that with Deborah Caldwell Stone of the American Library Association after the news.
And we want to know what you think about banned books. Have you challenged a book before? Do you count banned books among your favorite reads of all time? Call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You're listening to Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We'll pick up our conversation now about Banned Books Week. We've got a representative from the American Library Association with us talking about what Banned Books Week is and what kind of books get challenged or removed from libraries.
And we'd love to know how you observe Banned Books Week. Do you count among your favorite books maybe something that shows up on a banned books list? Have you ever challenged a book and thought that it should be taken out of a school library? You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can always post, too. That's on our Central Time Facebook page.
We have Deborah Caldwell Stone with us now, Deputy Director for the American Library Association's Office for Intellectual Freedom. Deborah, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me on this afternoon.
Well, you were listening along with Peter Parnell there talking about his book that's on the banned books list. What does it take to get a book on that list each year?
Generally, your book is one of the books that's most challenged in the country for that year. We measure challenges from January to December so that this year's top 10 list reflects challenges that were reported to our office between January 2012 and December 2012.
And what is Banned Books Week? Why do we need to draw attention to this?
Well, Banned Books Week is our annual celebration of our freedom to read, and also an observance of the fact that, in fact, that books are and still censored in our country. Despite the fact that we are a country that has a First Amendment, a promise of free speech, free expression, the freedom to receive those ideas as well. And most often these challenges occur at the local level with school boards and library boards. There are many requests to remove books, and every so often a book is actually removed from the shelf.
Isn't there a valid reason sometimes to remove a book? You don't want something too grown up in the kids section. Maybe there's something that a community feels isn't appropriate anywhere in the library where kids could see it. Is there a plus side, an argument in favor of challenging books?
Well, in fact, most books that are challenged are intended for the audience they're meant for. For example, And Tango Makes Three is meant for elementary students, and it was housed in children's libraries. And it's the same thing for Captain Underpants, which was our number one most challenged book this year. So often the books have been acquired by the library or acquired by the school board because they are developmentally appropriate, that they are part of the, you know, they do serve the curriculum, but that somebody objects to some of the ideas that are expressed in the book or the language used in the book, and asks that the book be removed. So it's very, very infrequent that a book would be removed because there's an opportunity to remove a book because it's, you know, so beyond the pale. Some might argue that 50 Shades of Grey, which was number four on our list, meets that criteria. That book was primarily in adult collections, intended for adult audiences, and really was the kind of book that many, you know, there's many tight kind, how can I put this? There are books like it in libraries across the country. That deal with, explicitly deal with romance and relations between people. And so to argue that that was beyond the pale as well, when it's appropriately shelved in the adult collection and borrowed by adults, is also demonstrates that there's very few instances where books that are are in libraries should be removed.
And can you give us a sense of some of the other books that often find their way onto the list? What are some repeat customers, if you will?
Well, absolutely, True Diary of a Part-Time Indian. This is its second year on the list. Beloved by Toni Morrison has frequently appeared on our list and is also part of our top 10 this year. Looking for Alaska by John Green. Books that are intended for YA audiences are often challenged. And our general observation is that books that are most frequently challenged, most challenges, involve an effort to protect young people from books, which may be a laudable motivation, but often involved, as I said before, trying to protect young people from ideas that of which a person disapproves, not because the book is inappropriate or at the wrong age level. We challenge that kind of censorship. If there's any foundation for the First Amendment at all, is that the government, as particularly public libraries, public schools, shouldn't be barring access to ideas because someone disapproves of them. So we have this celebration, this observation every year to bring that up and to celebrate our freedom to read.
Let's go to the phones now. We have Shannon on the line in Kenosha. Hi, Shannon.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What did you want to tell us about?
So I have two daughters who just started college. They're in their freshman year this year. And when they were younger, my husband and I would use the Banned Books Week to choose a book that had been either that was on the list or that had been challenged in the past. And we would read the book as a family, and we would discuss why we thought the book had been challenged and what were the ideas in it that people found so controversial.
Interesting. Thanks a lot, Shannon. What do you think about that, Deborah?
It's actually a great way of using Banned Books Week for learning about what idea, about challenges and why certain ideas are disapproved of because they're unorthodox, and reaffirming why the reading is important and making up your own mind about literature for yourself. We encourage libraries across the country, schoolrooms across the country. That's precisely what teachers and librarians are doing this week with Banned Books Week, is discussing these books, learning from these books, and learning why such challenges come about, and what individuals can do to fight censorship and to think for themselves.
Thanks a lot for the call, Shannon. We'll go now to David in Dubuque, Iowa. Hi there, David.
Hi. I'm a retired librarian, and when I worked in a public library in Marin County, California, I created a Banned Books Week exhibit. May have not been original, but I thought it was it was effective. I wrapped about 25 books in plain brown paper, and then on each one, they were banned books, and on each one I put a little legend that said why the book was banned, and sort of was a guessing game for users of the library to say, oh, they're reading about why this was banned. What book could that be? And then on the back would be the answer.
Got it,
and
David.
Yes.
David, thanks. I want to get a response from Deborah. Is that something that you see a lot of librarians do around the country?
Libraries frequently do displays of banned books to highlight the week and to give readers the opportunity to discover these works of literature and to consider why they were banned. Often people call our office and are just astounded to find out that a favorite novel of theirs made the top 10 list, and they just can't even conceive why somebody would want to remove it from the hands of students or from the readers of a community. And it's a great educational tool to highlight the problems of censorship in our country today.
Do you see banned books as an issue that's on the decline? Are we challenging fewer and fewer books, or is this something that we're going to be marking for years to come?
I think that's something we'll mark for years to come because, you know, as I noted before, there are parents, there are community members who are concerned for young people, and they have their opinions, their beliefs about what young people should be reading about, what ideas they should be exposed to, and they will voice their concerns about that. And actually, that's their right. They should. You know, every citizen should be able to petition the public library board or the school board and have their concerns considered. However, if the request is to remove the book from the hands of the students or from all the readers in a community simply because that individual disapproves of the values or the language used in a book, that's the kind of censorship that we just have never really supported as a value in our country. It's what the First Amendment was designed to fight, was official suppression of ideas. And, you know, what we, for our country, is really all about the democratic value of allowing everyone to make up their own mind after considering ideas for themselves. We don't see that the concern is never going to go away, particularly since most challenges are about what young people read. On the other hand, we would hope that over time that there's some shared value about protecting everyone's right to choose for themselves what kinds of books they read and what kinds of ideas they encounter.
Deborah, thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem. Thank you.
That was Deborah Caldwell-Stone, Deputy Director for the American Library Association's Office for Intellectual Freedom.